Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women.
We highlight the Latinx presence in the comic book industry as creators, characters, and fans.
Join us as we talk chisme, comics, fandom, and beer.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Comadres y Comics. This is episode 208. We're your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
I'm Jen.
Welcome back, ladies. How's everybody doing? I'm loving the rain. I don't have to drive in it, which is probably why I love it.
Well, the rain loved us so much, it came right under our back door and into our laundry room and flooded it. So that was not nice. See, our house was built in the early 19-somethings, like, I don't remember, 20s maybe, I don't know. But anyhow, the door in the back, the size of the door, is a weird 1920s size door. And so when we needed to replace it, there was no manufactured door that would fit in it because they just don't make that size anymore because this is a tiny little house. So the handy dandy handyman, and I use that term very loosely, came and cut his own size. I guess he took a door and then cut it down, but there's like a big, like 2-inch gap underneath. And so mice and rain and whoever else wants to come through there comes through there.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
Yeah, so this morning I at 4:30 in the morning I woke up and heard the rain and I ran and I put a towel there because we have to do that every time it rains, but apparently I either didn't do it good enough or it was just too rainy because Eddie did say it rained very hard and we woke up to the floods anyway. So I am not loving the rain as much as you are, Sarah.
Oh man. Looks like we're going to, you know what? I'm going to take my basmati rice sack, my sack, and then fill it with sand and give it to you. So you can.
we need sandbags inside our house.
Incredible.
No, I've always thought about that because, you know, when you get the basmati rice at Costco, it comes in a big, yeah, like burlap bag. So yeah. I'm like, you know what? I think you guys need that. I used to use them for grocery shopping, but then I started like sending them to Nicaragua because, you know, it's American. Well, it's not really American, but they're just like, ooh, it's different. It's fancy. Like, it's a burlap sack, guys. Don't be crazy about it.
That's funny. I used to love the flour sacks that my grandma would save. And like these days, they're like vintage, like cool things that you probably pay like $25 a sack on eBay for or at the antique fair. But they were like cloth bags and like my grandmother would take them and sew them and make aprons out of them.
Oh, that's so cool. So do you think like you can like stencil like a dollar sign and it looks like money bags from like the 1930s?
Yeah.
See, now you know what to dress up for Halloween for as. That's Do you still funny. Have those sacks?
No, I don't know if my mom got rid of them. I just remember them being there growing up. And some of them she would just use as like kitchen towels to dry the dishes and stuff like that. So, you know, Latina grandmas, they don't throw anything away.
Oh, God. And that also kind of like growing up, it's kind of like a thing that I have now. So, like if there's glass jars, yep. I wash them and I keep them. And then everybody's like, why are you keeping the glass jars? And I'm like, I could use them for stuff. Like I could put the salt in there, you know, like, yep. I don't know, put my laurel leaves in there. Sometimes I put my, what is it called? Cause I'm trying to grow a lot of avocado, aguacate trees.
Oh, okay.
And so right now, and I put the pit and it's like perfect because it doesn't like go through the entrance. And so right now I have like 4 avocado trees and then I have like 5 pits that I'm trying to germinate.
Yeah.
Was that the right word? Yes. Germinate?
Yes. But, I used to try to do that when I was younger. It's just take the pit and put it. And it wasn't until much, much long later that I learned that you couldn't do that, that you had to germinate it, that there had to be, in simple terms, a boy pit and a girl pit.
Well, right now I have two that are just lost causes. I took them out of the plastic bag too soon, so they don't have anything green, just mm-hmm. roots. And then I have this huge one that's about maybe like 2 feet tall right now.
Oh, wow.
So, nice. Yeah. So, hopefully they'll give me some fruit. If not, they look cute and I feel like accomplished in seeing something that I took from a seed to like a little kind of sapling. So I'm kind of excited.
Aw, that's cool. Well, I kill all of my succulents, so I doubt that I'm at avocado tree level.
But on a cool note, the aloe that you have outside your front door is still alive.
You know why? Because my mom was living with me for 4 months and she meticulously watered it and took care of it while she was here.
Oh my God.
And it started turning green again. And it's back to brown now.
Oh no. Well, with the rain, maybe it'll, it'll sprinkle on it. But I always thought because, you know, like when you drive, you have a lot of water bottles that mm-hmm. kind of are half drunk. I thought you would take them out and then empty them on it. No? Okay.
No, I don't. I thought take about them out. It. That's the critical error. I don't take them out.
Oh, my God.
They just stay in my car.
You just roll around on the floor of your car. Yes. That's so cool. Well, don't watch Final Destination. I don't know which part. But one of the water bottles rolls under the brake.
Oh,
paddle.
Yeah.
Pad. And I then see, that's they can't
the ways to die.
Yes.
You
know, that movie is the reason why I won't drive behind big trucks that have those, anything metal in the back at all. Either get far enough back or just get out from behind the truck altogether. And if you check on TikTok, I think it was TikTok, there were some very frightening videos of cars, or a car that I saw, where there were those metal rods through the car. I don't know what happened. Maybe, who knows? But that was like, yep, that's why I don't do that.
Don't want to end up like that.
Yeah, I think you're supposed to put like a red rag or red plastic at the end of the large cargo you're transporting.
Yeah.
And maybe they didn't do that and the people didn't break in time, or maybe it slipped because the cylinder and it just slipped because they broke really fast. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. That shit is scary.
And all because of that movie, or else I would have not even thought of it.
So... One memory of Frank was driving on the freeway and he has one of those like, it's sort of like a house, but it's his workstation on the back, mounted on the back of the truck.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So somebody had a bright idea. I don't know what screws they loosened, or maybe it was just time that loosened the screws. He said that there was a point where the whole house, because of the velocity of the car and the wind or whatever, it carried the house up and then set it up on the freeway. I don't know what they did. Yes, I don't know what they did, but yeah, I think they just left it there. I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, I was like, didn't you feel it? He goes, I kind of felt it. But he wasn't alone. He was with his boss. So, you know, his boss would say what happened with it. But I honestly, that shit is scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That shit is very scary.
Is it raining up north with you?
Yes,
Jen?
Actually, it was. It was thundering earlier today, and I saw not a single, not a double, but a triple rainbow. It was really nice.
Oh yeah. Wow!
So it's been like kind of like raining, thundering a little bit here, but it like comes and goes. So like right now, it's not mm-hmm. raining anymore, but it's. I think it's going to start raining again in like a couple hours, but it has been.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So very exciting.
It's a wet week here in California.
Yes. All right, everybody. It is time for Chisme de la Semana. And today I have some chisme that I was just like so proud to have found. I was like on like Facebook Reels, which is I think like people can do Reels with their TikTok. But I'm mostly on Facebook Reels instead of TikTok. But anyway, the chisme is, guys, if you remember us reviewing Frontera by Julio Anta, he makes, in the story, there's a character called El Jefe, which is a jaguar. That shit is real. That jaguar does exist in Arizona. I'm just like, what? Julio Antae has all the information. He really did his homework. But they just discovered a second jaguar, and his name is Sombra.
Ooh.
They didn't just discover it. Actually, he was discovered back in 2017. So there's El Jefe, which was the original lone jaguar in Arizona. And then they found Sombra, which is they found on 2017. And just recently, they found a third jaguar. And that jaguar's name is Yoko, which is Yaki for jaguar. Yoko. And they're all male. So how is the chicken and the egg? Like what? Like, how are they reproducing? I think it's aliens, dude.
I don't think they're reproducing. I think they're traveling.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how they got past
because I don't know about you, but I just learned that Arizona borders Mexico. thank you, Hanford High Geography. education, but
oh my God.
Yes, when I went to visit my brother in Arizona a couple of weeks ago, he was making fun of me because he was talking about he lives in Prescott, Arizona, which is up in the mountains. So when you showed me this, I was like, oh my God, I gotta tell my brother to not let the kids go out by themselves. They're gonna get swept away by jaguars because he lives up in the mountains where it snows. In Arizona. So we were there, and apparently the characters from Tombstone, who are Doc Holliday and I can't remember the other ones, but anyway, they either passed through there or settled there or whatever. So there's a whole bunch of like historical stuff about them there. And my brother said, yeah, they traveled all the way here from the border. I'm like, what border? He's like, from the Mexico border. I'm like, the Mexico border? They came that far? He's like, well, Arizona borders Mexico. I'm like, it does? And he just looked at me like I was crazy.
Oh my God.
He's like, well, what did you think was below Arizona? I'm like, I don't think anything's below Arizona. I don't think about Arizona.
What's below Arizona? More Arizona, of course. Exactly. Obviously. Duh.
Obviously.
Wow.
That's so funny.
So, yes. So, since now I found out they're so close, they must just be traveling.
Yes. No, but yeah, I was like, oh my God. It was just such a joy to find that real and realize that El Jefe is a real jaguar in real IRL. In real life. So that's my chisme because I found that totally fascinating. That
I found it horrifying. I just literally pictured my youngest nephew being dragged away by by the cat, this big ass cat.
Oh man. Well, but in any case, so this jaguar El Jefe is like really popular that he is in a comic book. I mean, I want to be in a comic book. That's cool. That's
you
cool
are in a comic book.
I know. But I didn't have any speaking parts.
Baby steps.
Baby steps. So that's my chisme. Okay, everybody, it is time for On My Radar. Kristen, ooh, what is on your radar?
Yes, please tell us.
Okay, so I actually had to do some work for an On My Radar this week because, as you all know, I'm not in a comic book store all the time, and so I don't have access to comic books the way that I used to. So today I was like, I gotta find me a book that is that can be on my radar. So I went to League of Comic Geeks and I looked to see what books were released this week, and there were a couple of number ones of note. Trinity number one, which is Wonder Woman's daughter, and also kind of like a new Wonder Girl type character that she came out in the latter part of last year, came out this week. But the one that really was of interest to me was Moon Man number one. And the reason why it was interesting to me was that it is written, it's co-written by Kyle Higgins, which is one of the writers who used to be local to LA, who actually used to come into the shop all the time. And I had the opportunity to meet him and, you know, get to know him and talk with him, and have always tried to keep up on his books. But it's co-written by Scott Mescidy. And if you don't know who that is, I definitely didn't. but he is better known as Kid Cudi, who is a rapper and has been in the rap game for over 15 years and has even more recently started designing clothing. And so he actually now has written his first book called Moon Man, and it is a book that I called the local comic book store here in Torrance, Comic Cult, and I asked if they had a copy. I was going to put a bra and shoes on to go get a copy so that I could read it and be ready for the podcast. But they told me that they ordered 40 copies of them over their two distributors, and that they completely sold out on Wednesday.
Wow.
So 40 copies, completely gone. They said they had them on reorder and that they just were really surprised at how popular it was. So I was not able to get a copy, so I had to buy it digitally, online. And you can yourself go to mooncomic.com and our moonmancomic.com to buy your own copy. But I was able to read the book, and, it was really good. I really enjoyed it a lot. It's a book about the main character called Ramon Townsend, who is a black man who is an astronaut. And he is on this mission to the moon, where basically this billionaire paid billions of dollars to have this mission because he wanted to be, for lack of a better explanation, basically the first person to TikTok on the moon. So Ramon actually is, it has been an astronaut for NASA, but went over to this new company called Janus, and they are just hated by the community. It's almost as if it was described as if Amazon and like Tesla came together, and they're this company is just like a reason why lots of people are losing their jobs, and they're just like paying people poorly. So like big business just coming and trying to take over space. And so Ramon is on this mission, and they don't get very far. Something happens where as they start to go, something goes wrong and they're not able to make it to the moon. But within the time frame of whatever went wrong, 7 minutes is missing on cameras, on, I guess, whatever form of black box moon mission rocket has on board. And nobody knows what happened. So they're back on Earth, and people are, you know, wondering. They're in isolation. They do all these tests. They're asking them what happened. Ramon and all the rest of the people on the flight are like, I don't know. We can't remember. We're not sure. Well, turns something does happen, or something did happen that it's of note, that is going to play out over the next issues of this story. And basically, the description of the book on Image website says, those missing minutes hold an earth-shattering secret. And with all eyes turned to him, Ramon will soon find himself becoming something the world has never seen before. So I actually went onto YouTube, and they did a release of this book here in LA. I think it was just this week, because everybody that was there got to have a got to have a copy, and they had an interview, and Kid Cudi was there and Kyle Higgins was there, and they talked about how Scott, who's Kid Cudi, really was into comics ever since he was a little kid. He talked about how he used to draw Ninja Turtles when he was in elementary, and he would sell them on the playground for 50 cents. And like, that was his side hustle as a little kid, that he's just always really loved comic books. And he wanted to create a character and create a story that was for the people. And there is a description in the back matter, not a description, a little letter in the back matter of the book from Scott that says, "Moon Man is a character for the people. I wanted to make a hero that represented all that was good in the world and followed a man on a journey of self-discovery. When I was a kid reading comics, I used to dream of the day I could make my own hero, my own world. I'm finally living another childhood dream, and now Moon Man is yours. He is your hero for the people, for the planet, for the universe." So I highly recommend the book. I really enjoyed what I read. And interesting as well is Scott is Afro-Latino. His dad was Afro-Latino, African-American, and Mexican. And so obviously, Scott is, I guess, now a quarter Mexican. So that was really interesting to me too. It's a sci-fi superhero story, and it's coming from the perspective of someone who isn't from really the comic book world, but has always been a fan of comic books. And so I highly recommend it. I'm assuming they're going to do a second printing here at some point, because not only was it sold out at the comic book shop that I called today, but Image as well is completely sold out, because I went to check to see if there was any available, and they are all gone. So I'm assuming that there'll be a second printing, but you can read it digitally if you want. It might even be available on Hoopla, which is the library app that you can read comics for free on. So check it out. It's Moon Man Number One by Kyle Higgins and Scott Mescidy.
All right, everybody. It is that time, my favorite time, the special time. It is time for La Hora de la Cervecita, guys. What are we drinking today?
Me, I want to say it. We are drinking L'Amour Noir, a black IPA by Absolution Brewing Company. And
I don't even want to drink it. I just want to look at this picture on
honestly,
the cover.
Right. Very 13th century Black Plague. Actually, yeah, that is a Black Plague doctor on there. So
yeah.
Uh-huh. And yeah, L'Amour Noir, the Black Death, the Black Plague. So you know what? This is hitting all the marks for me. I don't even care that it's an IPA.
That's actually exactly why I bought this beer, because I love the artwork.
It's so good.
And for it to be brewed by Absolution Brewing Company here in Torrance. Well, not here, but over where Kristen is in Torrance. I think it was just perfect. Local brewery, great artwork, black IPA. I'm here for everything. So I just opened mine.
I'm going to open mine right now.
Mm, smell is good. It's refreshing smell.
A refreshing smell. So the hops used are Simcoe, Mosaic, and Amarillo.
Smells like my death.
I think we've drank black IPAs before, if I'm not mistaken. But I just did a quick search of what a black IPA is. And basically it just says that the black IPAs are characterized by caramel, malt, and dark roasted malt flavors. And that basically they're just in simple terms an IPA using dark malts. So I'm very curious. I smell it.
Yes.
It doesn't smell very strong in any way, shape, or form. I don't smell it hoppy.
That's so funny, because I smell the hops To me, it's very really? Noticeable. It smells like an IPA trying so hard to be a porter.
That's actually very accurate.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I just saw Jen pour it, and it has a frothy head. And that's actually what happened when I opened the can. There was a little froth in the head, which I'm enjoying. I am enjoying
it's the so happiness. Dark. It's just, like just a little of, head. A glass of oil.
Just a little head.
Ooh.
Yeah. I like it. I like the bitterness, nutty flavor of it. I like it almost kind of like it's either like resembling dark chocolate or unsweetened chocolate or chocolate.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then also has a nutty, buttery sort of flavor in the back of it. And then it kind of the hops do kind of coat your tongue a little bit. But not in the way that is just overpowering. It's just kind
this
of
is
like
really good.
I know it's really just it's surprising. I'm just like I wasn't expecting it to be this good.
I definitely start to taste a little bit of the ashtray, which I taste when we drink stouts and porters. But it's not a deterrent for me in this case because there's no coffee. Mm-hmm. Real strong coffee flavor for me. I do taste the chocolate. I don't taste any hops, though. I mean, not any hops. I don't taste that overpowering IPA hoppiness, which I'm glad about. I'm glad that there isn't that for me anyway.
Yeah, and it has a kind of a gold label on the front of the can, and it says 98 out of 100. And it below that in very small font, it says Beer and Brewing Company. So I went on that website and I typed in search 98 and nothing really came up but something else. But then I typed in Absolution and a lot of stuff came up. And then I noticed that they actually have podcast episodes within the website. I didn't dig too much into it, but I think maybe they put this gold label in the front just to kind of maybe as promotion for this website and their podcast. I think we're doing something wrong, ladies. I think we should contact brewing companies and have our label on there. And then, yes, that would be cool. But I think we're ready to rate it. I think we went over the flavor notes. And yes. And just to let you know, when everybody says Amarillo, I always think Amarillo, like yellow. Amarillo hops.
Same. Uh-huh. When I saw it, I didn't even think Amarillo. I was like, Amarillo, yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because you both are more native speakers than I am. So I read it in English.
Incredible.
No, I'm sure it's Amarillo. I'm absolutely sure it's Amarillo, but I just call it Amarillo because it just reads to me like that. But what is our rating scale, Kristen?
So we have a 5-point rating scale where 1 out of 5 is very unsatisfied. 2 out of 5 is unsatisfied. A 3 out of 5 is right in the middle and neutral. A 4 out of 5 is satisfied. And a 5 out of 5 is very satisfied. If there is a beer that just does not fit on the scale and is off the charts, we give it a Super Saiyan. So I will go ahead and start, and I am going to give it a 4 out of 5. I'm going to give it a satisfied. I really do like it. It's not my go-to, or it wouldn't be my go-to. I would definitely want to try this on tap. I think that would just nice and fresh would be really good. And I would drink it again, but 4 out of 5 is my rating.
Well, this is Sarah, and I want to also mention that 7% ABV. ABV.
ABV.
Yes, ABV. And I really, I'm loving the can art. It's just really great. Even the font is cool. Like, I really loved it. And like I said, it caught my eye because of the can art, which a lot of people, you know, underestimate. Can art will attract drinkers. And I really love it. So I'm going to be very satisfied with this. And I really love it for a frothy good time. What about you, Jen?
You see, I'm kind of torn because I do like it. But I don't like that it's not a porter. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? This could have easily been a porter, and I could have gotten. I know you don't like the coffee taste, but I prefer the coffee taste. So whenever you say that you're like drinking an ashtray when we would drink porters or stouts, I'd be like, no, it's like we're drinking chocolate or coffee. Now this without that like strong coffee flavor, now I see your point. Now I see what you say when you're saying you're drinking an ashtray, because after a certain point, this feels like I'm drinking an ashtray. Like all I'm getting is that kind of like kind of burnt malt taste.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But don't get me wrong. I enjoy it. I kind of enjoy a robust flavor, so to say. So I'm kind of stuck between a 3 and a 4. I'm going to keep drinking it. So there's that. So, and I'll go with a 4 out of 5 as well. But yeah, it could have been a porter or a stout. Yeah, like that's just my own thing. So, but no, it's pretty good. I like how it tastes. I like the can art as well. Like Sarah said, like it just the vibes of this. Like just look at it. It's really dark. Look, it almost matches my black sweater.
Yeah, look at that. It's super good. Okay, yeah,
a 4 out of 5.
Nice. That has been our beer review. All right, guys. Now it's time for our book review. What are we reviewing today?
So today we are reviewing Augusto Mora's Illegal Cargo, published by Black Panel Press. So right here on the back matter, it says, "No one is illegal." Although he had never been the most present father, Jose Sendero, an elderly Salvadorian, has always wanted the best for his daughter Elena, who left home to build a new life in America. When an unexpected messenger arrives at his door, Jose must decide whether to bury his head in the sand or leave everything he knows behind to be there for his daughter when she needs him most. Written and illustrated by Mexico City-based comic artist Augusto Mora, Illegal Cargo is inspired by the true stories of everyday migrants on perilous journeys north from Mexico, Central, and South America. And actually on here, there is a seal of cultura from Mexico City. Estados Unidos Mexicanos Cultura Secretaria de Cultura. Wait, is it from Mexico or is it U.S.? No.
I think it's Mexico.
No, it's Mexico.
Yeah,
it's Mexico.
Estados Unidos Mexicanos. So this is probably sponsored by the Mexican government as well. So I'm not going to lie. I cried at the end of the book.
Oh, me too.
Like, I was legit. Like, I was like, I had to sit it down and like...
Yeah, and kind of like sit in your feelings.
Yeah, sit in your feelings and also, I remember when these news reports, and I mean, they're still happening, but when the news reports of the women marching, asking like, where are our children who had immigrated, and him saying like, I've been on the road, like, I'm not even trying to like go into the U.S. or anything. I want to know where my son, my daughter, my sister, my brother, I want to know where they are. And I remember... the stories of, or even like stories now from Mexico City of like when the students that went missing, or the mothers tracking down their killed children and finding like going out into the desert and just digging and finding any bodies that they can, and how they got spots to like basically like shallow graves dropped off to them from people who felt guilty, and they were just like, here. It's a very heavy topic. I mean, immigration is a contentious topic in the U.S. as well, even amongst Latinos as well, about whether it's good or not, depending on the generation. I even want to say between different ethnicities of Latinos. So it's, but I think that shouldn't. I think this book does well in bringing like, okay, like whatever it is, this is what's happening now, and this is what is going on. And it's not even so fantastical, the like, it's not, I wouldn't even say it's really magic that or the supernatural that happens, because this would be something that if someone told me, I would be like, you know what, that is your experience, and I believe that you experienced that. And like, sometimes like life is stranger than fiction, like or whenever like you get like a what's the word, como like a presence, I guess you could say, or like a warning, intuition or whatever. Like, how many people do we know who have had correct intuitions? I personally have known a lot, and who they were like correct or right or like stuff like that. And that's mostly what it came off as, instead of like, you know, just a regular like, oh, it's a coincidence. I'm like, damn, that's a lot of coincidences.
Definitely. I mean, we start off this the story where Cassie is narrating a part of the beginning of the story. And Cassie is a journalist who is doing a documentary on the immigration process of all these individuals that are in search of a better life or cannot live in their villages back home because of gang violence or a poverty or, you know, whatever. Or just, yeah, just a lot of really tough situations. I mean, people leave everything they know, including, you know, a place where they know the language, their family, their friends. You know, it's just, it's a big trek. It's a big responsibility that they're taking on, and it's a dangerous one as well. And apparently Cassie meets Elena. Elena is a girl that is from El Salvador who is traveling to the U.S. in search of a better life, and she's traveling alone. And so Cassie becomes friends with her, and they trade contact information, and then Elena goes missing. So Cassie takes it upon herself. She's worried about her. The last time she even heard from her is that she was in Lecheria, which is apparently a very dangerous town in Mexico. And that's where she lost contact with her. So Cassie takes it upon herself and goes to El Salvador and searches off her Cassie's dad, Jose Sendero. And when she finds him, he's drinking himself into a stupor. And he's like, no, you know, Elena is alive. You don't know. Don't come here telling me lies. She's alive. She's fine. But that's not really true, because he also hasn't heard from her as well. So now he's a man who had three children with the woman he loved. He was not a really, I wouldn't say good. He wasn't just the best individual. Like, throughout his life, we see a little bit of like his panels when he was young. You know, like, he would steal, or somebody would complain about him. Or in the last panel, we see that a father comes with a pregnant woman, you know, kind of, and there's no dialogue. All you see is the artwork. And that's what's amazing about this book, is that Augusto, there's not much dialogue in the kind of like the flashbacks, but because he draws it with such expressiveness, and he chooses how to present part of the story in kind of a dialogue less drawings, but we get the kind of the full story about it. We don't even need any text. We totally know what's going on. It's just really remarkable. And so basically, we know that his elder son is lost to drugs, and then his other son was killed by gang violence, and then his daughter chooses to immigrate to the U.S. So now he's alone, and he's been drinking, and he goes to a bar, and the bartender's like, you haven't paid your tab, like, get out of here. And he sees on the news, and he sees his daughter on the television. And it's like but he's really drunk. So the bartender, he just throws him out. He's like, get the heck out of here. And so he is like kind of like stumbling home. And then he sees an entity in the distance. There's no dialogue. You see a little heart like right next to him. And you know, like, he's just trying to mosey on over and put the moves on this lady. All you see is her back. But then she turns around and she has the head of a horse, but not a horse horse. It's the skeleton of the head of the horse. And he's like, are you the Sea Guanaba, which is kind of a folkloric entity in El Salvador, meaning woman with the head of a horse. And I was like, is she a demon? What's going on? But basically, she tells him, you have to go find Elena. This is not where this journey ends. You have to go and find her. And that's when we all come on the journey with José Sendero. And I think that the story is told so beautifully with the art included. The art just really frames the story. It just is really amazing. What did you think, Kristen?
So I found it really interesting that this entity, this actual mythological character, is kind of El Salvadorian's version of La Llorona, because the mythology states that she had neglected her children or her child as a human, neglected her child so much that the god Tlaloc condemned her to roam for eternity in this shape. And I found that really interesting. I feel like there is some form of La Llorona myth and mythology in all of Latinx culture and different countries. But I got caught up in wanting to know what happened to Elena. And at the end of the story, I had a completely opposite reaction than you two. I was mad. I was like, what the F? But I said the real word out loud. That's where it's ending. I am so mad. That's where you're going to leave me. And then I read the back matter. And I read a little bit more about, and I reread the back, and I was like, you know what? It's not about what happened to Elena. It's about what, because Jose, we see him experience so much trauma and tragedy on his journey to find his daughter. We see him on La Bestia. We see him get kidnapped by drug dealers. We see him get shot at. We see him eating at soup kitchens for immigrants. We see him meeting other people who have physical and emotional scars of their travels that they've made. And so the book was not about Elena per se. It was about all of the Elenas in Southern and Central America making this journey, and of all the families who you guys were talking about earlier who have lost someone, and their was in the back of the story, or at the end of the story, there are little dialogue of people who Jose comes into contact with who talk about how they've been searching for 10 plus years. Whereas a lot of people, myself included, would be like, why? Like, they're probably dead, which is exactly what I thought about Elena. But like, I'm not a parent. I don't know, you know, what that would be like. I don't have anyone who's been in that situation. And when I looked at it from that perspective, and I went back and I read it again, and it was much, much more impactful to me. And it did definitely like get my emotions. I think I really was trying to read into it a story that I wanted to be told when that wasn't the story that the book was trying to tell at all. And reading the back matter helped me to frame it in that way and to really appreciate it a lot more. So I'm glad that I was able to do that, because I was ready to come on here and complain.
And even then, I see where your frustration is, because in the end, this is like a story, in a fictional, and we want a story to be complete, to have a happy ending, or at least to have an ending, because when it's open-ended, it's just like, well, what the fuck? But that is a reflection of the real stories that are out there.
Right.
Of like, some of these people are never found. They never know. Yeah. Yeah, they're most likely dead. But when you don't have a body or you don't know anything, then there was something that he said. He was just like, when he was talking with the horsewoman, her name escapes me right now.
Siwanaba.
Yeah, he was arguing with her, and he was just like, what do you want? I need you to leave, like, my head. You're like, you're worse. I think he said he was like, you're worse than dead. You're false hope. And I was just, I was just like, and that's why these people still continue looking for their loved ones or trying to find them, because they have, I don't know if it's false hope, because I mean, some of them have found their like loved one either like lost or something like that, but they found them. But that's only like one in a million, whereas everybody else, they're most likely dead in the desert. And and like that is the true ending. That is, and right. then we as the reader, and also just someone who happens to live in this fucked up world, know that that's the real ending. So all we're left with, I think also, and this is also why I kind of like the way it ended too, is that we also end with a false hope, because who knows? Maybe he does find her. Maybe she's alive. Maybe she isn't. Maybe she's being held hostage or ransomed, or who knows, or something worse. But maybe she's still alive, and maybe she's not dead. So we, along with Jose, are living in false hope with him. And that was
definitely. I mean, that just really anchors us to the story, which I really didn't expect, and I really didn't want. Go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, it was really funny, because when I started reading it and it was in that perspective, and then it switched to Jose, at first I felt a little tricked. I was just so like, man, I don't want to read about a deadbeat dad feeling sorry for himself. And then I kept
a drunk
yeah, and then I kept reading it, and I was just like, oh, it's more than that. It's like, it's a story about humanity and also about remorse. And I was just like, okay, you know what?
Yeah, actually, I agree with you, Jen, because when we started reading from his perspective, and we saw, you know, his flashbacks, and then also him being drunk and the way he treated and spoke to Cassie, I was like, ugh. 2 weeks in a row, I'm reading a book, or no, it wasn't last week, but the week before, where I read a book where I was so annoyed and disliked the character. I'm like, man, another character that I'm going to not like. But it definitely took a turn, and I was able to. And the thing is that what we see, yeah, we did see Jose as a child, where he was a little apathetic and didn't have direction and was kind of going off the rails. But I think what we saw as an adult was just loss and grief. Because,
giving up.
Yeah, all of his children had either died or left, and the love of his life, although I don't know if it's the love of his life, the mom of his kids.
Yeah, he said he loved her.
Got sick and passed away, and so he was literally alone, and that was something that really like resonated with me, as I'm seeing him drinking and just acting as if he didn't care what happened to himself, but it was him caring what happened to his daughter that kind of pulled him out of that depression and forced him to make, to take action and to make that journey.
Absolutely. To have a purpose, you know, to really fight for it. I want to also touch base, because I know you said La Bestia, Kristen, but maybe a lot of our listeners don't know what La Bestia is. La Bestia is a train from a private company that goes across Mexico, from like the real south of Mexico, and it's kind of the most, it is the most economic way to travel. But the thing is, their cargo, it's a cargo train. So basically what the immigrants do is they, it doesn't even stop because there's no like ports or like stops or, you know, not many. And so what you have to do is you have to, when it's stopped, you have to climb on it right before it starts going, because if you climb on it before it starts going, they'll take you off. But you have to run and jump on it. And that's very dangerous because it goes at a specific speed because it's not for passengers. So a lot of people, what happens, and we have one character here, La Liga, they call him El Liga, and he used to be a fighter in LA. He's in Mexico doing like his fifth attempt to go to the US. He fell asleep and he fell from La Bestia and his arm got caught under the rails and was amputated. And there's a lot of stories like that. A lot of people die just falling asleep. A lot of people tie themselves with their belts with knots or whatever. So because they're so tired, they're hungry. You know, you're on top of the train, the rain is coming on you, the sun is coming on you. And basically, you know, you just tumble off. And also when the train slows down, then you have La Mara Salvatrucha, which is the gang that is taking advantage of the fact that you have money traveling to the U.S. and then they rob you. They strip you of your dignity. They point guns at you and they take everything from you. And then they leave you there. And then you have no other recourse but to continue on your journey or go back. But nobody goes back. I mean, I don't know anybody who has gone back. But so that is what La Bestia is, the beast. And they call it the beast because it has taken so many lives. And we also got to mention Las Patronas. Las Patronas are in southern Mexico. And Las Patronas, they've been doing this for like over 20 years, I think. What they do is they cook every day and they put these meals in these plastic bags and they throw them like slingshots at the people on the train to try to feed the people on the train. They can't get off and eat or go to the restroom or bathe or anything because they're on this train that is moving really fast. I've seen videos of Las Patronas. It's such...
Their aim is incredible, honestly.
I mean, they've been doing it for like 20 years. So it's like... It's just really... And there's also... We got to... Las Patronas, like, my God, that's selfless work. That's just helping your fellow man. And that's just really amazing. You can donate to Las Patronas. I think they have social media now where you can see videos and stuff and you can donate to them to try to feed these people that are trying to cross the border. They're also albergues or like safe houses where it's run by like religious groups and people who donate, and they basically let you take a shower, eat, and then continue on your journey. There is also Los Federales, who will hunt you down because you are illegally entering Mexico. Because you're from Southern and Central America, it's basically legal to enter Mexico as well. They've been trying to do these visas for them to come in, but the process is so long and they have them kind of at the border with like really kind of like a really bad situation where they don't have like restrooms or food or anything, but they have to wait there to get those visas to enter Mexico. So I mean, there's a lot of things going on in here. And of course La Mara, which is basically like hardcore gang members who have tatted up faces and necks and the whole body. Just you, when you see one, you recognize it because they have MS across their face or their forehead. It's just really crazy. And a lot of people, if they actually go and they investigate you, they look through your stuff and see if you have family. If you have family, then they abduct you and they ask for a ransom. If you don't have family, they just kill you off or they just don't bother with you. I mean, there is and some of this stuff is also led by or even condoned by Los Federales or government officials. So it's just like, it's a no-win situation, and it's so tragic, and it's so horrible, and yet people still make the journey. It's just, I just feel so much about this. It's just crazy. I know people who have immigrated from Nicaragua this, like within the last 5 years, and because of social media, and because you can buy like a SIM card wherever you go, or like buy minutes or whatever, we've been able to like be on the journey with them. So when they say like, I have blisters in my feet, I just trekked through 3 hours of mud. Like we see all that, or like, they'll be like, I don't have any money to eat. Like, you can actually give them like $10 money, so yeah, they can
especially
eat.
It's incredible to me just how, and I think we've talked about it before, how much the journey has changed, but the journey is still there.
Yeah.
From long ago, since the U.S., since the Mexican-American War, like even before then, TBH. Yeah, and like when people are just like, why would I donate to like these people who are like feeding them? Like, why don't, like, they should just stop or something like that. Even if they stop, those people will still make the journey. People will die making the journey, and they'll know, and like their family members will know, and then still other people will go, and they'll still make the journey. This is not something that you can stop. It is such, which is always like to me, like, it's not exactly mind-boggling, because I also feel like the urge to travel and stuff like that, maybe not that big of a distance, and definitely not without my own creature comforts, but I've been blessed to have a passport and options and stuff like that. But like, in if it's just like me just wanting to like travel and like do stuff like that, imagine these people who have no other choice. They'll like, okay, like, they're like, I'll die. I'll either die here, or I'll die on the way, or I'll make it. So you know what? Let's go. Right. So I think supporting these organizations and like looking up to it, or even just like, I know that there's one that I regularly donate to that puts out water. And I know that sometimes the water gets destroyed, but you know what? I don't fucking care. I'll keep donating if they can keep putting out water, and they can keep destroying it, and there'll be like a vicious cycle. But one of these days, someone is going to find that water, and it'll save their life. And that's basically what this is, like the food or like the donations, or even with their religious, at least they're doing something. Like,
yes, absolutely. No, I totally get it. Part of the story we see is that when Jose Sendero, he arrives at that town, it's called Lecheria. Mm-hmm. In Mexico, and he's walking around with a picture of his daughter, like asking everybody, and 11 months go by, and now he's homeless, sleeping on the streets, eating from the trash can. It sucks to say this, but I was so overwhelmed by him just doing that than just being at home drinking. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, He actually changed in the journey. Mm-hmm. Like his, anyway, I don't want to say anymore because I'm getting emotional.
Because like, it's an emotional story, like, and it's an emotional topic. And I think the fact that we can have this conversation over this, I think that speaks for the quality of the work that is here. And I think it's honestly translated. It must be translated.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to mention that I forgot, because he's from Mexico. So he actually has a webcomic that's called Muerte Querida, and that's all in Spanish, and he's based in Mexico. So I'm thinking like it was written in Spanish and then translated, but honestly, it was a seamless transition, honestly, for me. I thought it was written in English. I didn't feel that it was at all like, I could feel where it was like translated.
Not seeing, because usually they do put like it translated by. I don't think this was translated. I think he wrote it in English.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, I'm not seeing.
I saw some of his posts in Instagram, and they are both in English and Spanish. So I'm thinking he just knows English.
Yeah.
Period.
Which, honestly, legit. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are we ready to rate the book?
Yes. And like I said, you can follow him on his personal website. It's called is called muertequerida.com. M-U-E-R-T-E, querida, Q-U-E-R-I-D-A.com. And you can see of his other books, and you could commission his artwork, and you can go to the link to read his free webcomic. So check that out. But what is our rating scale, Kristen?
So our rating scale is a scale of 1 to 3 conchas, where 3 conchas is the most conchas that Jen's mom ever let her eat in one sitting. So that was the best. And if a book we've read is off the scale, then we definitely have ratings for that as well. So did you want to start, Sarah?
Yes. I loved this book. When I saw, you know, it's a hardcover and it's bigger than the size of a regular comic book. And I just thought, okay. And I saw the art and it looked really youthful. Like, it didn't look, I mean, it looks a little dire at the cover, but I was like, no, this is going to be fun. Oh my God. It took me through an emotional damage. But besides that, it's an amazing storytelling. It was really beautifully paced. It wasn't overly, sometimes there's so much dialogue that you're just like, oh my God, it's just really messing up the aesthetic of the art. But the art and the dialogue was well paced. The colors were amazing. The artwork is amazing. The feeling I got, how I got so engrossed in the story, and I still am attached to the story, even though I read it like a day ago. I'm just like, I'm still here, you know, like I'm still living it. I'm just going to give it the whole panaderia and a jug of water. That's what I'm doing.
Okay, so this is Kristen, and like I mentioned earlier, upon my second reading, I think I was able to appreciate the story more for what its intent was supposed to be. And obviously, I've never had to make a trek like that across multiple countries. And I've never had to make a trek like that at all, where I definitely was taking my life into my own hands and taking risks and trying to survive danger at every turn. But this book really does such an amazing job of depicting those horrors that these migrants and immigrants are experiencing trying to find a better life. And that's the thing, at the end of the day, that's all they're doing, is they're trying to find something better for themselves and for their families. They're trying to just survive. And the fact that there's people who are against that, or people who would rather they die in a desert than allow them to drink water, it just boggles my mind. Like, the people have lost their humanity, and that's just horrible. I agree. I definitely am going to give this book the whole panaderia. It was really, really compelling and did a really good job of sharing the stories of so many people who so many other people are still looking for. Jen, how about you?
Oh, yes. So I'm going to give it tres conchas, the entire panadería, you know, all the things, because it was any book that makes me cry immediately, that's it. You've done it. You've made me feel an emotion. I highly do recommend reading it. Just like, if you want to like know more about kind of these journeys as well, but also like, I think it is a good book for compassion and just to like be aware, because you should know. I mean, why not? So the entire panadería for me.
Well, guys, that was our review. Es toda la panadería. Es más que tres conchas. Es conchitas. Es cuernitos. Es los little los puerquitos. I mean, empanadas. It's the whole panadería, guys. So that was our book review. It is now time for Jens en la librería.
So today, I think very aptly, I have Safer Places by Kate Anderson, a new collection of stories about isolation, memory, liminal spaces, and small magic from up-and-coming author Kate Anderson. So this is done by Avery Hill Publishing. Avery Hill is a publishing company based in London that helps aspiring creators reach their potential and is a home to the geniuses that the mainstream has yet to recognize. This is not their first project. They have created five other projects that have reached their goals. And the synopsis they have for this book is, welcome to our latest campaign. With this campaign, we're funding the brilliant debut graphic novel Safer Places by Kate Anderson. We will be publishing a second book by Kate in the near future, so this is a great introduction to the work of a creator we're really excited about. Kate's designed some fantastic bonus items to accompany the book too, so scroll to find out more. From road trips to doctor's offices to the mysterious spaces under the house, Kate Anderson's short stories explore the secrets and magic typically unseen in everyday life. A walk through the forest, a family move, a day in a normal life. Anderson's depictions of these ordinary moments transform them with a double take, revealing the strangeness, surreality, and transformation within. With powerful and personal emotional writing and art, thoughtfully combining magic and life as we all know it, these stories establish Kate Anderson as a presence in short comics format fiction. So it's going to be 208 pages, soft cover, 160 by 220 millimeters. Not milliliters. That's for liquid. Millimeters. Because imperial? No, metric system. I'm so American right now. Then it has some reviews and some previews of the short stories that are going to be happening. It has a very dreamy, I want to say, or like it very much living up to that liminal space kind of artwork. Kind of limited in color palette, but also like simple, but not simple. It looks really, really great. So, Kate Anderson, pronounced she, her, is a cartoonist from Boulder, Colorado. Her short stories have been published by Parsifal Press and The Rumpus, and she received her MFA from the Center for Cartoon Studies in 2022. Kate lives near Zurich with her partner and tiny dog, where she enjoys walking in the woods, making comics about memory, nature, and wizards sometimes, too. And then they have like bonus items that are going to be included if they make their goals and stuff like that. You can always make a pledge without expecting a reward. You just want to show support. But the base pledge does start at £12, which is about $16. Damn, that conversion rate is crazy.
I know, right?
And this is for the digital edition of the book. The next tier up is £15, or about $20, for the physical copy of the book. And then at £20, or about $26, you get the physical copy plus a Suon patch. And then at £35, which is about $45, you get the physical copy, a patch, and a signed print. And those are the three tiers currently available, because apparently they've sold out of the next tier. So,
wow.
Yeah, whoa. Which was, it included an original sketch. Mm. That's actually not a bad price for it. So check it out. It's on Kickstarter. It is Safer Places by Kit Anderson from Avery Hill Publishing.
Now it's time for Kristen's Juntos y Fuertes. What do you have for us today?
So today in Juntos y Fuertes, which is our segment where we highlight projects by members of marginalized communities, we have a book, an anthology published by Stacked Deck Press called We Belong. And it's an all black, all LGBTQ sci-fi fantasy comic anthology. It is on pre-order right now, and it will be shipped in February. So it's February 1st today. So it doesn't say exactly when in February, but it does say that they're going to ship in February. So this all black all LGBTQ sci-fi fantasy comic anthology is published by Stack Deck Press in association with Prism Comics. And you know, we all love Prism. It's edited by comic writer Victor Kearney and cartoonist and critic William O. Tyler. And We Belong features over 20 talented comic creators. It is $23.95 for this book, which is actually a very good price. And you can just go to stackeddeckpress.com and search for it in the comic section and pre-order it today.
That's just amazing. I've been seeing that on social media and it looks amazing though. The cover is amazing. Is that Lizzo on the cover?
It looks like Lizzo.
Yeah. I was just like, is that Lizzo?
Incredible.
Like, I was like, oh my God, it looks amazing. It just really looks really great. And you know what? I'm sure they're going to have it at QCon.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I'm really excited to like flip through it and take a look. But yeah, that amazing stuff, guys. All right, guys, now it's time for saludos. And saludos goes out today to at Kevin Garcia. He's working on a public domain comic characters telling a story of the span of over 80 years of history. So he's tapping into all these characters that are free domain. He is promoting it now. The Kickstarter should start February 14th. And I'm very excited because there's a lot of characters out there on free domain that are sound pretty interesting. But he's going to kind of like... obviously kind of not morph them, but like give them a new redo. But he's working with Newsom from Lightning Strikes. Uh-huh. He's doing some of the art for some of them. I'm just like really excited. He's working with a lot of great talent. He's paying the artist as well. He's writing the story and he's working on it right now. And you can follow his TikTok and Insta at KevinGarcia_com. KevinGarcia_com, and that's for his TikTok and an Instagram. And also you can listen to him on he's a co-host of the podcast My Primos Podcast. So that's My MY Primos Podcast. And yes, that is como se llama when you speak English and Spanish in the same sentence.
Spanglish.
That is Spanglish, guys. It's My Primos Podcast. But yeah, Kevin Garcia, man, he's doing the stuff. I'm really excited. And his TikTok is really super informative. So if you get a chance, follow him on TikTok. He has a lot to say about comic history and it's really interesting. He's a teacher and he's working on this comic book. I think it's his second, but I'm really excited to see what he does with these characters that are public domain. So saludos goes out to you, my friend, Kevin Garcia. All right, guys, now it's the end of our episode. Where can they find us always and forever?
You can find us at our very own website, comadrescomics.com, where you can find links to all of our social media, as well as to our YouTube channel, where we have our ancillary show, Las Platicas, where you can actually watch us with your very own eyes conduct interviews with very talented creators and learn all about their projects.
Don't forget, we're going to be at the Latinx Comic Arts Festival in Modesto in March. So follow us for more information on that. We're also going to be at QCon in July, I want to say.
June.
In WeHo, whereas yeah. We call it WeHo, but you guys call it West Hollywood. But yes, so yeah, check that out. We're also going to be at WonderCon. So check that out. If you see us, stop us, say hello, give us the finger. I don't care as long as you know who we are. I love you. You hate us, that's okay. I love it that you hate us because that makes me feel special. But thank you so much for listening. We would not be here without you guys. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you. We have been your special shout out to our producer Mackenzie.
Yes!
She won an award. Yay! At She Podcast. I don't know the details about it because she hardly posted anything, but I can't wait till she tells us the whole story. Out. But she won an award. She went to freaking Florida to get her award. That was amazing. Anyway, Mackenzie, you freaking rock. Thank you so much for working with us. Thank you for editing our episodes. You're super awesome. But this has been the episode. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.
And that's on Period Network.